Welcome to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini, the podcast where we meet the extraordinary talents, both on stage and off, working at Opera Australia. These conversations were all originally filmed for our streaming service, OA TV. You can find more online at tv.opera.org.au, as well as full productions and behind-the-scenes footage. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to OA TV and my very special guest, Vladimir Funchal, the conductor. So, Vladimir, welcome.
Thank you, Lyndon.
And it's great seeing you in Australia again. You've been here for a while now because you're kind of stuck because of COVID-19. And I gather when you did leave Australia, you went to Turkey because you started your own orchestra there. In Odessa, is it?
I was going to go to Odessa after Turkey.
Right.
I was in Ankara.
Okay.
And I was conducting Zemlinsky's Die Seejungfrau, The Mermaid.
Yeah, yeah.
And Richard Strauss's Don Quixote.
Fantastic.
Orchestra sizes that don't exist anymore. 100
yeah.
people on stage.
Mm.
And then day three of rehearsals, I was told it's cancelled and I had to make the decision to go to Europe or come back to Australia. But
yeah.
everything was shutting down by the hour, so I thought, come back home, and been waiting ever since.
Yes. But look, let's go back a bit, because you grew up in Sydney.
I did, yeah.
But where did your parents come from?
So I was born in Odessa, actually, and my parents come from Odessa. It's a very musical city, very special place.
Yeah.
So the violinist Milstein, David Oistrakh, Richter, Gilels, somehow it was a very fertile ground for musicians.
Mm. But it was, and how did they feel when they came to Sydney? Because it must have been a huge culture shock for them at that time.
I came out with my mum. Dad joined later. I don't know how she felt. I think she was busy trying to find work, and she immediately got work. I think she worked. One of her first jobs was with Graham Murphy at the Sydney Dance Company, accompanying. She was playing solo recitals. She was teaching. She was doing everything she could to survive, and. Yeah, I think it was such a huge change. It was probably such a shock that there wasn't much time to think about it. It was just do.
Yeah, yeah. But your first instrument, obviously, is the piano.
So
did you study with your mother?
I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was difficult. I think more difficult for her than it was for me. But first few years were good. I was quite obedient. And then it became difficult and I went to other teachers. Then I started violin as well.
Yeah. But you studied at the Sydney Conservatorium?
I did, yeah. I first went to do mathematics and finance at Sydney Uni after school, and then I realised I can't live without music, so I went and auditioned for piano major at the Sydney Con and went to study with Nikolai Evrov.
And you found that useful?
Oh, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Took the ferry across Sydney Harbour, looked at the Opera House, and it was an incredible time. Good study.
But you did have this passion to be a conductor.
Yeah, I knew that I wasn't going to be a concert pianist. And I started accompanying singers. I mean, that's where I met Eleanor, and I worked with Elle, and I liked making chamber music. And then I tried conducting in Melbourne at some masterclass, and I thought, oh, this feels good. And then after 3.5 years of my piano major, I just left to St. Petersburg. I actually left to do a series of auditions. St. Petersburg, Helsinki, and then I was going to go to New York. And I thought, wherever I get in there, I'll stay. And Petersburg was the first stop. And I got in and I just stayed. I had no idea what I was in for. And that was a huge shock.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In every respect.
So you arrived in St. Petersburg, but had you spoken Russian with your mother?
I had, yeah. I'd
so
spoken
you could
Russian
speak
with
the language
my grandma, with my mum. I could speak Russian, but couldn't read or write very well. I'd left Odessa when I was 5.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My reading and writing was of a 5-year-old. And then I had to suddenly study literature, read books in Russian. So I had to pick it up quite quickly. But it wasn't so difficult because I already spoke the language.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But what about studying conducting in St. Petersburg? I mean, it's a sort of romantic idea, I suppose, for a lot of people, but I'm sure it was very difficult.
Yeah, well, the first year I got really depressed because as a Bondi boy, I could not understand where the sun had disappeared for 3 months. I mean, October was difficult. November was just darkness. December, I just thought, are we ever getting out of this tunnel? And I was just depressed. Yeah. I couldn't sleep. I was going to bed at 4 a.m., waking up at 7, 8. Just thought, something weird's happening. And then the teachers don't help by being extremely tough, you know, throwing music. You come to class unprepared. You're just made mincemeat of in front of your colleagues, which is even more degrading and embarrassing. You know, I had this teacher, Yuri Falik. He studied composition with Shostakovich, and he studied cello with Rostropovich.
Oh, my God.
He was the only one that was allowed to still smoke in the conservatorium because he was sort of... He was a lovely guy, but he sort of had authority above everyone else. Yeah. He was always smoking. So you're in this class, just a cloud of smoke, but he always had students sitting there. Mm-hmm. So I learned orchestration and score reading from him. And I remember once in a lesson, Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, I'm playing, and I was really nervous, and it's not working out. And if this was brain surgery, do you understand you're constantly hitting the wrong points? You're just killing Tchaikovsky. And he said it so quietly, and then he just closed the music. He said, go home and learn it. Just killed me, you know, the quiet, the silence that, and all the other students are sitting there watching, and then you go home and again it's dark. And the upside was Marinsky was across the road, and my conducting teacher was a conductor at the Marinsky. So I'd go to a ballet, I'd go to an opera twice, three times a week, and that would be so uplifting. That's the balancing side. The museums, the Hermitage, my favorite, the Russian Museum.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's art that the West doesn't know
Absolutely,
of.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
So there are so many elements that were so uplifting that balance the tough winter, and I don't know, it's good. It's good to become tough.
Yeah, but it must have been good when Eleanor, your wife now, who wasn't your wife at that stage, used to come and visit and
that was wonderful, yeah.
I'm sure. Well, particularly during those difficult times, it's always...
And she learned to cook really well in Russia, so that was great. So I'd come home and warm meals. It's so meaningful and significant even to have a cup of tea when it's minus 25 outside and it's just yucky. It's not the idealist winter you think about, white snow. It becomes, in the city, it's just black with dirt, filth, and then you come home, there's a warm meal.
It's fantastic. You spoke briefly about the Russian Museum and the painters and the paintings that are in there. When I was visiting St. Petersburg once, I went there. And I agree, the paintings are, well, they're much larger than life. And I was overwhelmed by the scale of them, but also in the style of painting that is so huge that I guess to a lot of people in the West, they find it over the top. But the more I walked around that museum, the more I began to appreciate it. And I suppose to understand a bit more about Russian culture. And, you know, with Russian singers and musicians and so on, where it's, it's far more important than life and death when they're playing. So do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, as you said, you came from Bondi, but being immersed in that and how that influenced what you do now?
Firstly, I felt that in Australia, with my name Vladimir, everyone thought I was Russian and everyone thought I was a Russian musician. Quite honestly, I wasn't, because I'd grown up here. So I felt like I was connecting with something of my past, and it felt quite natural. Secondly, for one example, I was conducting Scheherazade, and my teacher said, can you imagine The Ninth Wave by Ivazovsky, the painting, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's a huge painting of destruction,
that.
Of these huge waves and a ship that's been turned over and people holding on to the raft. It's an incredibly powerful painting, and I didn't know it. And the lesson stopped there. He goes, go to the Russian Museum, you need to see this. And suddenly, you could see these one wave after another, another, and it's not just three culmination. Like in German music, it's very structured and quite formal. Russian, it's just these endless culminations, and you've just got to have huge stamina to actually get through it. So my conducting study was a very total kind of study. It was art, it was literature. I had to read a lot of poetry, And it was a very complete understanding of art,
yeah,
in a sense, rather than separate little things.
Yeah.
And then there were, of course, the challenges of catching up on harmony and oral training that just is on a completely different level there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, here we sit down and we do voice leading and we have one voice and we write it. There, my first harmony teacher said, okay, sit down, play 8 bars, modulate from here to here to here. She said, how?
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, it's not a talent. All these things, they're just skills that they learn from the age of 5. And all my colleagues, they were just sitting and playing modulations. But by the end of it, I could do it.
Yeah.
Because it is a skill and it's something you can learn. So,
well, it's interesting because I was speaking to your wife, Eleanor, about technique.
Yeah.
And you, it's vitally important to master the technical aspects of it.
It is.
You're speaking about exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And once you have that, then you can conduct.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk a little bit about how it was, you know, to start then conducting and you know, being a professional conductor and what it's like to stand in front of an orchestra as a young musician, because, you know, you're standing in front of a lot of people that have been playing for many, many years and they always like to sort out young conductors.
Well, you said it. So on one hand, it's wonderful because the palette of colours and expression and possibility is just so huge.
Mm.
So you're like in a fairy tale, but in a matter of 30 seconds, there's always 2-3 people that remind you you're not in a fairy tale.
Mm.
And you're doing a job and you've got to be very good at it.
Yeah.
I find it interesting because I go back and I conduct at the Mariinsky. I'm very lucky. Gergiev invites me to conduct there twice a season. And the way I conduct in Russia or in Eastern countries like Romania is very different to the way I'd conduct in Luxembourg or Paris or Germany. So the way I have, and I learned this the hard way by not getting reinvited to a few places, by making mistakes, because in Russia, when I was learning, I was taught to be very principled with my beliefs. And no matter the cost, you've just got to get to the vision.
Mm.
And you've got to get everyone with you.
Mm.
You just go.
Mm.
And if you look at the Russian conductors, they're despots.
Yeah.
But they get results.
Yeah.
In Europe, you can also get amazing results, obviously, but you've got to do it a very different way.
Mm.
You've got to do it much more gently.
Yeah.
And musicians are more responsive in a much more gentle way.
Mm.
But I find that, funnily enough, when I come back to Russia, I've got to switch to a bit more authoritarian, a bit
stronger.
Being a
Russian conductor, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm not that anymore. We live in Vienna where it's all very, very, very refined, very Swarovski crystals and dress up for the Viennese ball.
Mm.
It's all very socialite. Russia doesn't have that. It's powerful. It's anything but a Viennese waltz.
Yeah.
Very small, very refined. It's huge emotions.
Yeah.
So I find it very different conducting in Russia and Eastern countries. I conduct in Odessa, my city of birth, and where I'm starting my orchestra, but hopefully if COVID ever ends.
Yeah.
But I've conducted Traviata there and the Odessa Philharmonic, and again, they just require strength of leadership. If they feel any doubt, any hesitation, you're finished. So, for example, I assisted Ivan Fischer, and he, with his orchestra in Budapest, he can sit there and go, let's try it like this. No, I don't like it. Maybe let's try it like this. If you start doing that in Russia, you've just got to be very clear.
Yeah.
Very concise and not do this, not talk too much.
Yeah, yeah.
As a young conductor, something I've learned very effective is don't talk too much.
Mm.
Make music and let musicians solve the problems and try and make as much music as you can together. Mm. It's a dialogue, so the more connected you can become with the musicians and the music, the better the result will be. Sometimes I'm now learning it's better to compromise on some great ideals to have a great connection with the orchestra because then we'll achieve more because then we'll go for more risks together. So, and the same with singers.
Yeah.
When I was working with singers when I was in Petersburg, I got to conduct quite a few operas as a student. I think that's the benefit of Petersburg Conservatorium.
Mm.
You get to conduct whole operas.
Mm.
there was an orchestra there 6 days a week for conductors.
Wow.
10 till 1.
Yeah.
So as a conductor, you get twice a week, 45 minutes with an orchestra.
That's fantastic.
And you get, from third year, you get opera productions with the conservatorium singers, with a professional orchestra. So huge benefits. And also, yeah, earlier on with singers, it's just soft, soft, well, more, more. And now I just realize it's all about the dialogue, the human dialogue between people. And then you go for your great ideals or whatever you can achieve. So, I mean, it's a learning process. So that's why good conductors, if you were to ask me any, they're all over 60.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it takes a long time.
It takes a long time to develop. It's a very difficult
thing to do. And it looks easy from the audience, I'm sure, when they just see someone waving their arms. But it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
Furtwängler famously said, he said, profession of conducting begins after 60.
Mm.
But only if you've had 40 years experience behind you.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm gaining that experience.
It's fantastic. Well, Vladimir, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And I think you're going to play and your wife is going to sing. What is it you're going to do today?
We'll do some Chilea.
Oh, fantastic.
Your Son, Lumina, and Cella.
Fabulous. Great. Oh. We look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini. We hope you've enjoyed the chat and we'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast. That way, you'll get each new episode as they're released. We also hope to see you in the theatre in the not-too-distant future. And you can stay up to date with all we've got going on at opera.org.au.